Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa. Sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to the My First Gig Podcast. My name is Dwayne Dugan. Thank you for joining me today. Come on in, sit down, relax. Sit back. My guest today, I'm very excited to welcome the wonderful Catherine Bohart to My First Gig, the most recent of the gig debutantes so far. Catherine's only been doing comedy for 5 years, but has already made a name for herself up and down the UK. Appearances on The MASH Report, 8 out of 10 Cats, the ITV stand-up show, Comedy Central's Roast Battle, and much more. Last week I had Laura Lex on the show, and I know it might not have been as a mainstream name as some of those early episodes, but two reasons why I wanted to put that episode out. It was a great episode. Laura was so great to chat to. Real fun. Just a great example of what this story is meant to be. Going back, getting nostalgic, bringing up memories that you probably haven't had in a while, and sharing them with all of you. And number two, in the event that you haven't heard of these guests, there's a very much an emphasis on yet. You will hear of these guests soon. Let's get their story out there. Maybe this is how you discover these acts if you haven't already. And Catherine is no different. This was recorded at the Kilkenny Cat Laughs Festival in 2018 alongside James A. Caster, Reginald D. Hunter, that are already out there, and a few others yet to come. I had a very busy weekend. I think I spent 3 days there. Forget how many interviews I recorded. But before we get into the chat, at the time of recording, she was touring her show Immaculate. She's now touring her new show Lemon. It just began its UK and Ireland tour this week. And in those 2 years, sold out Edinburgh Fringe shows, television appearances, festival appearances, you name it. Even just last night, alongside a great panel on 8 out of 10 Cats. Now, I didn't see it. I'll watch it tomorrow. Tune in if you haven't. It's probably on catch up. I was too busy watching Love Island. Because that's what I do every night at 9 o'clock now. I've even gotten past the part where I'm like pretending to hate it. And pretend is the key word there, because once it sucks you in, look, you're all in. It just is what it is. I watched last year, got into it by the end, and then I was like, right, I've had my fix now. It's, you know, car crash TV or whatever it's meant to be. I'm not going to get into this this year. And I didn't. I don't know if I was gigging or out or whatever. I managed to avoid it for like the first 2 weeks. And now I found myself waking up after a gig, missed the episode done it before. My girlfriend's gone to work, and usually she'll throw it on in the morning if she's working like in the evening. I threw it on all by myself. And only that, it wasn't on catch-up yet. So I went and I downloaded it on the internet, connected my computer to the television, and watched it that way. I went through effort to watch this. And now I know their names, I know their personalities. See, my biggest problem with it is that you can't do anything. During the last series, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out, I really wanted to go see it in the cinema. I remember saying to my girlfriend, hey, do you want to go see this? She said, can't tomorrow, Love Island. What about the next day? Can't, Love Island. What about the day after that? And she's like, for the next 8 weeks, we're not able to do anything. And now I'm in that boat. I can't do anything. I'm thinking about it. I'm waiting for the next episode. Like, Saturdays are boring now. The most interesting day of the week, a Saturday night, is now boring because I can't watch an episode of Love Island. I haven't said a phrase today that I'm not proud of, but I'll stand by. And I mean, if you don't follow it, here's the gist. The couples have been separated, guys in one place, girls in the other, and they've been introduced to new guys and girls, and then all the relationships are like real worried about what their partners are going to get up to. And there's one girl who like is really into the relationship, and the guy who doesn't really treat her right. And my girlfriend said, oh, do you think she'll find someone? And I said, she won't. Even if she's too good for him, she won't do it. She's too true. Oh, God. Saying out loud makes me sad, but I can't even give out to myself because everything that you said is real there. So that's my life now. I've even turned the ringer on my phone. Nobody's had the ringer on in 15 years. I turned mine on just so I can tell people I got a text. Okay, that bit didn't happen, but look, I'm actually doing it right now. I'm going to try and find that ringtone too. Send it on to me if you have it. Now, I'm not sure this is the way Catherine wants her episode to be introduced, but this is my little ramble. Let's put Love Island to a side and maybe get down to some comedy. We're going to listen to Catherine Bohart's story of her first gig. Now, when you're listening, don't have your head turned. Oh, God, I hate myself. Oh, no. Look, that's the end of it. Right, cut this. End of this chat. End of me chatting. I'm never going to talk to anybody again. Certainly not you guys. Sorry for wasting your time. Right, enough of me. Into the chat. My First Gig Podcast with Catherine Bohart.
I wouldn't even consider myself one of the Irish comedians because, like you say, I mean, I was in London, 3 years before I started comedy, or 2.5 years before I started comedy, and I had never occurred to me in Ireland. So I've only done about 4 or 5 gigs here at all. Today will be number 5. And it's strange because, well, actually, to be fair, I should say I've had a uniquely lovely and entirely lovely experience with all Irish comics I've met. Everyone's been really nice and really welcoming, but I always feel like I'm being welcomed even when I'm coming home, which is interesting. But I think Irish comics in London really help each other out and are very supportive. They've all been really nice when I've been here, so I have no complaints in that regard. But I would say the thing that's interesting with it is that when I'm in London, I know I get away with more because there's sort of that... There's a lovely thing about playing the Irish card. You don't have to say anything, but there's a nice presumption, one that I think sometimes helps me, that you're going to be funnier than maybe you are. Or at least there's an expectation that you will be and that they associate the accent with storytelling and humour, which is nice and really helpful. But it does mean when I come back, I have to go, shit, is this actually funny? Or am I just saying it in my twee accent and they're going, oh yeah, that's so funny. So it's always good to come back and check.
I did notice coming back after doing a year there that all of my material was, hey, I'm Irish in England.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing that to Irish people not in England.
Couldn't give a shite.
Oh, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
A year out the window.
Yeah. I wouldn't say all my material is I'm Irish in England, but what it does mean is like there's things, loads of things I would have taken for granted that we understand, like diocese, convents, transubstantiation. I can say those words in Ireland and people go, yep. Whereas in London, I have to explain them. And so I found loads of humour in trying to figure out how to do that. But then when I come back, I have to remember that I don't need to do the long form. I can just shorthand it because people know what I'm talking about and they don't need it explained. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you, yeah.
So that's definitely a difference. And also just learning to like speak in a way that everybody understands, as in slow the hell down when I'm in the UK so that they know what I'm talking about.
So you can fit probably about 20 minutes more material into your stuff today.
Oh yeah, like my 20 minutes in London is 5 in Dublin. Yeah.
Very nice. I was just reading at the time of recording, you just won a bursary this week.
Yes, the 99 Club in London do this bursary for female and non-binary acts who are taking their first show to Edinburgh. And so I was one of the two winners of that, which is really nice.
Very nice, yes.
And my girlfriend was the other winner, so it was a win for the house.
There you go.
A win for the parish, as it were. But yeah, so that was nice. And the 99 Club are, I think they're the only club that do anything like it. But it's really nice of them.
So that's going to go towards the show this year, Immaculate.
Yes.
And which you're performing in Kilkenny this weekend.
Yes, I am. Well, I'm performing an embryonic version of it, shall we say.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you excited for the first show?
I'm so excited because I've never been here, Kilkenny that is. And I mean, I've been here because you used to have to drive through here to get anywhere. So I've been here, but I've not done a show here, so I'm really excited.
I want to go back and before we talk about your first gig, do you have any memory of what your first memory of comedy is?
Yeah. Yes. I have like quite a distinct memory of maybe not like, as in like the first things that spring to mind are obviously when we didn't get cable television until I was 18. Cruel, cruel parents. My brother and sister are younger than I, so they got it much earlier than I did. I'm still fucking livid about it. Am I allowed to curse? I've cursed. What can we do? So I obviously remember watching Father Ted. I think everyone does. But earlier than that, I think there was definitely a time in my life where I thought the three comics who existed were Tommy Tiernan, Dylan Moran, and Joan Rivers, because she used to be on TG Cahir. I don't know if you remember this.
No, not at all.
They used to dub her sometimes, but if you sat close enough, you could still hear her in her Americanism.
You had to kind of like bypass the Irish.
Yeah, it was rubbish. It was like they used to do it with them. They used to get really weird American stuff. Like they used to get The O.C. and before that they used to get Survivor. But so anyway, that's how I saw Joan Rivers, and she, Dylan Moran, and Tommy Tiernan were the... I had Tommy Tiernan on DVD and Dylan Moran on DVD, and that was my... Those were the comics that I thought were, you know, were alive.
Sure. Do you think it helped seeing a female doing it? Because I think, especially, you know, 10, 15 years ago, not a lot of people would see that.
Yeah.
It could be kind of almost feel like a closed door or something. Not even a closed door. There wasn't even a door almost.
Well, I'm quite conscious that I grew up in like almost a comedy saturated time when I was a teenager, at least. Like, as in, that's when you had Mock the Week and you had Live at the Apollo and you had... So I'm conscious that I actually did get to see... Not enough, but obviously loads more women than people even a couple of years before. Like I saw, you know, like Eva Vidal and Catherine Ryan and Jo Brand and loads of people. But yeah, I think it is important that I saw Joan Rivers so early because of the type of comedy she does, which is such high status. Like I can say whatever the hell I want. I'm not that kind of comic. I am quite high status, but I don't think I can say whatever I want. But I think it was cool to see a woman who is that brash and quite aggressive in a good way, not in a gendered way. Yeah. And seeing Dylan and Tommy, I think was really good. I mean, I say it like I know them. I've never met them because they're both so verbose. And so unapologetic for their like incredible sort of linguistic acrobats.
Yeah.
So, acrobatics. So
grandiose.
Yeah, really grandiose and really like dark and have totally different pacing. But I mean, I say all this, I didn't know I was watching it like and imbibing it at the time.
Sure.
But I loved it.
What was your first experience of live comedy? Actually going and seeing it, do you know?
That's really bad. I don't know. Can I think of any? I didn't see much live comedy at all. My earliest memory is in university, which is really bad. So like I was maybe 19, 20 and I went to the International. But I was sat near the back and really drunk.
Sure.
So I can't say it was a seminal moment in my, comedy development. It was just a, oh, look, sure, there's someone up there. What else can I do?
You'll never
please?
Pass there going, this is where it all began.
No, absolutely not.
What was university? Where was that?
I did law for a year in UCD and dropped out. And then I did history and French in Trinity.
Two very distinct differences there. Like.
Yeah, I didn't want to do either, to be honest with you, but I had to finish. So I did.
So what brought you to London?
I went to do a master's in acting for screen at Central.
My girlfriend, that's where she went last year, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so I went there and then, because I'd done, while I was at university to get through the old history degree, I did 2 years at the Gaiety at Night, because that's what I thought I wanted to do. I wanted to be a star. I wanted to be an actor, and then turns out they're not the same thing. And then I ended up in Central for the year.
So you obviously had some aspirations to perform in some way.
Yeah, I think, I don't know why that was the case. Like no one in my family is that way inclined. And it wasn't like I was particularly gifted as an actor. I just had decided early on that's what I wanted to do and was sort of staunch about it. Now I'm much more flexible, which is nice.
So obviously going to college, studying different things, but eventually... Where did thinking, right, I want to try stand-up come from?
Never occurred to me. I wasn't getting any work as an actor. Surprise! Turns out ginger and very freckled and of average talent is a tough sell. And so I was temping in a property management department in a huge property firm in London. And I was doing like marketing, and so they had me run a marketing event which was basically for women in property. This is a dull as dishwasher story, I'm sorry. It'll get interesting, maybe it won't, it'll conclude shortly. And I was there and they said, can you run this women in property event? Last year we did manicures and cocktails. And I was like, excuse me? That is a really outdated understanding of what women want, especially women who work in property. How dare you be so absurdly binary? I'm going to do something else. And so I got Funny Women. I googled Funny Women because I was going to put on my own comedy night. Turns out they're a company. And I got...
Oh, you literally googled Funny Women.
I googled Funny Women because I was like, come on, we could do better than
There'll be a database somewhere.
Yeah, there's got to be a list online, right? And then I found Funny Women, the company, and I had them come in to run an event, as in run a comedy night for us. And I don't know what it was in that, maybe in part of the organization of it, and the fact that they were very... like, you're gobby, you should do some comedy, that got me to... Now, I don't do things without studying because I'm... so I wasn't like, yeah, I'll just go gig. I instead took 2 comedy courses and then did a gig. Because I'm a nerd like that.
Where were the courses? Both in London?
Both in London. First one, I'll be honest with you, I booked into the wrong course. It was writing for sitcoms. And it was not what I meant to do, but I finished it. And then I did a stand-up course given by Logan Murray. Who writes
the books, isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah.
Yeah, he writes the books on how to be a stand-up comedian. And
the banana books.
Exactly, the banana books is right. And so I did his course and then I did my first gig.
Where was that?
Well, it depends on what you count as technically my first gig. So you do a showcase at the end of the...
yeah.
Which I wouldn't say was my first
gig. A lot of people don't want to count that.
No, I don't. And then my actual first gig was at Comedy Virgins in Stockwell in London.
Cavendish Arms.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was my first one.
So you did the graduation.
Yeah.
And you wanted to do it again, I assume.
Yes.
And you found Comedy Virgins.
And then I found Comedy Virgins.
Did you literally Google Comedy Virgins as well?
I watch really unimaginative porn. No. I basically, somebody in the course had already signed up to do it. And they were like, if you come, you can just put your name on the list. So I didn't even book in. I just went to see if I could get my name on the list. And was very presumptive that I would because I brought people to support me. So
you have to, don't you? Yeah,
yeah, you do. You have to bring somebody. So yeah, that was my first gig, and that's how I came about.
That can be quite daunting. Like Comedy Virgins, what they do is they have, it's about 20 acts.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you when you're on.
No, it's
they
horrible.
They'll tell you your name, and you have to go, yep. Oh, I'm ready now.
Yeah. Which just means you stay on edge for 3 hours. It's
which
so
tense.
Which can
be good, but also can be probably self-destructive a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think it's good. I think it's anxiety disorder making.
Right.
It's awful. It's awful.
So the comedy courses obviously helped you with writing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think...
because it must be hard to write, having, I guess, never done it before for stand-up.
Yeah, I think the comedy course mainly just gave me the ego I needed to get on stage. I think... I thought I'd be fine with what to say. I just didn't think I had the guts to get up there. And Logan has this really lovely sort of effervescent, kind of infectious silliness that makes you think that you can make anybody laugh, even when you probably can't. So he's, yeah, I think he just gave me some confidence.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
First gig now. Do you remember anybody else on the show?
Yes.
Do you still see around or this?
Yep. Ross Smith, who's also debuting this year, was on. I remember because he borrowed one of my friends as a plus one because it was like his 30th gig and he was like, my friends are sick of coming, please can you... which is what we all do.
Before he hosted there, yeah.
Yeah, which is what we all do, isn't it? When you're like, you run out of friends who are willing to see you say the same thing again and again. And was it, do I remember anybody else? I don't remember any of the other 20 who were. Oh, maybe Bob Monroe. Yeah, I can't remember who else was on.
Did you, obviously you brought people, I was going to say, because sometimes people will do their first gigs almost kind of privately, secretly.
Yeah.
And then unveil it once they're comfortable enough. But you told people at the start, brought them along.
I made the complete opposite mistake. But actually it was kind of, well, I brought loads of people, especially from work, because that's where it had kind of, the idea had come from. And sure. So I was in work with some really nice girls and they would come to loads of my shows at the start. I don't know how they had the patience for it. Although I think the fact that I bought bottles of wine for them as they were there, it really helped. But what it did was, it was so nice and supportive for me, but also meant that in the first five or six goes that I had an undue idea of how funny I was, because I was like, oh my god, people are loving it. Now, had I listened back to any of the recordings, I'd have realized it was just my friends, but that's fine. It gave me enough of a boost to be like, I should really do something with this. And then when they stopped coming, I realized it's actually a lot harder than it looks.
It's nice to have that cushion. I want to talk about the graduation gig. So your first actual taste of getting up there telling mm-hmm. jokes. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what was going through your head before you went on stage? Like, if the MC goes up, you know you're next and you're going, right, this is it.
Yeah, I was on first.
Certainly those early years, first can be mm-hmm. terrifying.
Really hard.
To people.
Yeah. I remember, like, I still get quite physically nervous. I feel really sick. And there's still not really been a gig yet. And I'm 3 and a bit years into it where there isn't, for the 5 minutes before the show starts or before I'm supposed to go on stage, where I'm not thinking about ways I could accidentally injure myself or what would happen if I just ran away. So it was a lot of that, but for longer than 5 minutes, probably like 5 hours before, I thought, well, if I could hurt myself, not die or anything, but just hurt myself enough that I don't have to go, wouldn't that be a treat? So that was mainly what I was thinking. And I was thinking also just like, could I remember it? Could I last the time? Was anybody going to laugh? Obviously, was a big concern. Yeah, there was a lot of panic, a lot of panic.
Do you remember your opening joke that day?
Yeah, I used to do... Oh, maybe I didn't do that at the start. No, I didn't do that at the start. What did I used to do when I got on stage? Oh, man. Oh, I think I used to do this bit about my skirt. Oh, and that's right, because I used to do this bit about how you could see my cooch. I mean, it was a really bad joke, but it was like... I'd ask the front row, could they see my cooch? Because I was wearing one of those dresses, you know, where you leave the house and it's at your knees. And then by the time you get anywhere, it's sort of a boob curtain.
Sure.
So I do that. But when he got to the venue, I realized there wasn't a stage. So they wouldn't be able to see it. And nor can they, by the way, when it's on a stage, it's more of a, it's for, I don't walk around with my with my skirt up. But there wasn't even the suggestion that they might. And I still did the joke. Because I was intractable and because I had nothing else. So I was doomed if I didn't and doomed if I did. Yeah, that's what I did. Oh, how cringe. What a nightmare.
That's
yeah.
That joke is how it all started.
That's how it all started. Oh, God, that's so bad. Yeah, that's what I did. There was no stage and I still asked it.
How did that first gig go? How did you feel afterwards? And
it went quite well. It went quite well. Everyone in the room was really supportive, and also they hadn't run out of steam laughing at things that were only half baked because I was on first, so that was good. Mainly I just felt so much adrenaline. Like, I found comedy really addictive at the start. Like, had to do it as much as I possibly could, wanted to see it all the time. Yeah, I was excited.
You say that now three and a bit years in that you still get those nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I get a bit weirded out when as in they're horrible and they mean that you can't really stay calm or eat much beforehand and you're a bit of a pain in the arse for the 20 minutes before your show. But at the same time, when I don't feel anything before a show, I go, what's happening? What's wrong? So I like to up the stakes a bit for a gig. So usually if I don't feel anything, it means I'm not scared for any reason. So I'll try to put something new in or change the order just so that I'm back slightly tense about whether or not I'll remember everything.
Because you can be too relaxed.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And when I'm too relaxed, I'm so bad at responding. If I'm sluggish to respond, then that's usually a sign that I didn't have my head in the game to like things in the room or heckles or whatever. Yeah.
Do you remember how you closed your set now, or how it kind of wrapped up? Maybe one of those early closing jokes.
What did I used to say? Oh, I used to do loads of stuff about working in an office, and then I quit my job like 3 months in. So, what did I used to finish on? I don't even remember. Isn't that so bad?
No, I think certainly in those early days, people go through so much material that kind of,
yeah, you do.
It's
don't
so far
you?
Away now as well.
Yeah,
in
you
terms
write
of like
so
stage
much
time.
At the start. If you could do that. If you could keep writing that much but increase the quality, man, life would be a breeze. I think I used to do something about how I wouldn't get cast. I never got cast in anything unless I was cast. Like, what do they cast redheads as? And basically, the punchline was, it's always the prostitute. I imagine I thought that was funny at the time. And now I know better, and that's okay.
You learned. When you did that first gig, that graduation gig, and then obviously you went out and did the Comedy Virgin show, was it like straight away that you were like, right, I want to keep doing this? Or was it a tick, I've done it?
Oh, no, it wasn't tick, I've done it, because I didn't want to do it, as it were. Like, I wasn't like dying to get it off my bucket list or anything. So it was very much like, oh, this is interesting and I like how it feels and I really enjoy writing and I hated my job at the time. So it was something I could think about all the time, that were my place where my brain could go. And also, I think because I was quite good for a new act, but that doesn't really mean anything. That's like, I could talk for the time, right? But I wasn't as good as I wanted to be naturally. And that I found what made me keep going back, because I was like, oh, I want to be better at this. How do you get better at this? And then I was just kind of also quite lucky. Like, things sort of snowballed quite quickly for me. Like, gigs led to gigs led to gigs led to competitions led to... So I was quite fortunate in that sense. But no, I just loved doing it. And what I noticed very early on was that the biggest laughs I tended to get, which is, I think, indicative of how bad my material was, the biggest laughs I got used to be on things I would ad-lib. And so then I was like, oh, okay, how do I figure that out? Which I'm still kind of figuring out, which is that I'm not a sit-down and type-it-out kind of writer. As in, I am, but I work better... And I'm a better writer when I think about ideas and then say them on stage and then write it rather than the other way around, which is it was quite scary, but is for me the best way to write.
I'd agree. My issue is that you go, right, before I write it down, I'm going to go try that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lose it
mm-hmm.
before you get to the stage.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do to combat that?
I tend to tell stories. So, well, stories-ish. So what I'll the reason I don't write it down word for word is so that I don't have like, oh my god, I've forgotten exactly what's happened. It's usually born of truth, so I'll try to go to myself, okay, why did I think this was worth telling in the first place, and then start there on stage. But I'm actually quite comfortable talking, even if I don't know exactly what I'm going to say on stage, provided that is the right gig. So I'd say the reason that doesn't happen to me so much is that I never really try like brand new stuff where the stakes are high at a gig. Like, I wouldn't go to a club and do where I'm getting paid and do loads of new.
Of course, yeah.
So I think being comfortable that there's nothing to lose and reminding myself that I can chat and it'll be fine is the best way. Or trying to remind myself why I thought it was a good idea in the first place. Sometimes I totally chicken out and just go back to old material, but don't we all?
Do you think that, you know, studying acting and kind of a drama, a bit of a background, did that helped you when you started out?
I don't know. I know a lot of comics don't like actors who become comedians because there's a tendency to overperform. And I don't know that it did help me, except that I loved comedy because I could do it. Like, unlike acting, I wasn't waiting for anybody to book me in. I could just book gigs, and I didn't have to. So I loved, I really enjoyed it because I was like, we could just do this whenever. So I think it really helped my enthusiasm, my love for it. I'd say if anything informed my comedy, though, it would be less my acting background and more, I debated at university.
Okay.
And school. So I debated competitively for 8 years. And I'd say that informs my comedy more than my acting.
Always been on the front foot kind of a thing.
Yeah, and being quite like a little bit patronizing and a little bit combative. And also it did give me the confidence and the surety that I could talk about anything. Like when you've defended anything and everything that you've been given to defend with 15 minutes notice, you're like, I'll figure out something to say. So I think that helped.
As you said, you didn't, you know, you weren't longing to do this. You kind of stumbled in to fill a void that was there. But at what point did you realize, right, no, this is the lane I'm actually in now?
I think when I made I did a two-hander a couple of years ago in Edinburgh, 2 years ago. And so starting to get ready for that, I was like, oh, this is exciting. I like writing with a purpose. And then that same summer, I made the BBC Comedy Awards final and the Funny Women final. And then I was like, huh, okay, so I'm okay at this. I mean, I'm still only like, being best of newbies is not necessarily like, doesn't mean you're necessarily good enough to, but I was kind of feeling more confident about it. And then I was just naturally better at comedy than I'd ever been at acting. And I think that made me go, oh, okay, maybe this is, and then I got signed. And I think that was when I was like, I mean, I still, every time my agent calls me, I'm like, oh my God, she's going to drop me. This is the one. This is the moment. My agent's very lovely and I hope would never do that. But I think when I got signed, that was when I was like, oh, I can make this my job.
If you could go back right before your first gig, you know you're next, you know the MC's about to call your name, but you can pull yourself aside now and just give yourself a bit of advice. Looking back now, what would you say, do you think?
Have fun. Have so much fun. If comedy stopped tomorrow, I would be really glad I did it because I've had the best fun, the most fun, and figured out a lot about my own mind and my capacity to kind of push through fear. But I think I would just say, have fun. It's just a laugh. You're just telling jokes. I think it's so easy to overthink it, and I do overthink it. Don't get me wrong, big overthinker.
Are you sure?
Oh God, you've caught me in your trap. I think I'd say have fun, and also I would remind myself to ask what the worst thing that could happen is, because that's the best thing about comedy is you volunteer to fail. Like, you can't try new material or get on stage and have everyone like you every time without failing some of the time.
Right? Sure.
Like, it's just a necessary part of the process. And so that makes you used to it, and also makes you kind of impenetrable to it. You're like, I guess you're bad at this. And you're like, no, I just, like everybody, you have a bad day at work. But also with this one, you kind of have to. Like, you have to go out and say a bunch of stuff people don't like. And you can't be everyone's cup of tea, even when you're brilliant. Like, the best comics I've ever seen, I know five people who'd go, what? They're dog shit. What are you talking about? And you're like, what? I'm pretty sure last time I saw them, I saw history in the making. What are you? So it's subjective in a great way. So yeah, I think I like to think I'd just say have fun.
Catherine, thanks for talking about your first gig.
Thanks for having me.
There we go. That's all we got. That's it. That's the end of this week's episode. No, we want more. Oh, well, if you want more, tune in next Wednesday. Another fantastic guest. Guys, if you enjoyed that, if you enjoyed Catherine and would like to see her, now is the time. She's on a UK tour, just kicked off this week. If you're very quick, you can see her tonight in Leicester, and then she's going through a ton of towns. Oh, look, we'll read them all. Leicester, Bristol, Brighton, Northampton, Manchester, Bath, Crawley, Leeds, Milton Keynes, Reading, Margate, Nottingham, Oxford, Birmingham, Edinburgh, Glasgow, and Belfast. And if you're here in Ireland, let's give these ones a little special plug. March 5th, Comedy Cavern in Cork. March 6th, my very own Whelan's in Dublin. March 7th, the Draught Theatre in Blanchardstown. Head on over to katherinebohart.com for tickets. Make sure to follow her online, Twitter and Instagram @katherinebohart or @katherinebohartcomedy on Facebook. As always, if you've enjoyed the episodes, please, please, please tell people, but please tell me even more. Tell me on Instagram, tell me on Twitter, tell me on Facebook, tell me however you please. Just let it be known. We're collecting some really good chats here and we just want people to hear them. If you enjoyed it, tell people you enjoyed it. Subscribe to get episodes first. Follow at My First Gig Pod across all social media to see next week's episode before anybody else. And look, if my rambles didn't turn you off, then follow me at Dwayne Dugan, or come, if you're in Dublin, see me at Cherry Comedy in Whelans. I'm going to keep it short this week. I did manage to do this bit a little bit earlier. It was like 20 to 6 last week. It's just 20 past 2 this time. So slowly but surely, I'll actually have an episode edited before midnight. But not tonight. It is now Wednesday. I'm going to go to bed. When I wake up, I'll go read all of your messages. Thanks so much for tuning in to My First Gig Podcast. My name has been Dwayne Dugan, and I will see you next week. Unless, of course, you're going to go back and listen to an old episode now. All episodes at myfirstgigpod.com. See you sooner rather than later. That sounded threatening. Gonna go now. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's the My First Gig Podcast.